Well, my guest tonight at the big table is a playwright, screenwriter, director, and actor. Michael Christopher is currently starring in the USA hit show Mr. Robot. He plays the CEO of E-Corps, the evil corporation that Emmy Award-winning actor Rami Malek's character is trying to take down. He's in town with his new play, Man in the Ring, which is in previews. It opens this Saturday on stage at the Court Theater in Hyde Park, directed by Charles Newell. The play focuses on the true story of six-time world champion boxer Emile Griffith. It's a world premiere for the Court Theater, the Pulitzer Prize-winning, the Tony Award-winning. Michael Christopher is my guest tonight at the big table. Mr. Christopher, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's not every day we get a Pulitzer Prize/Tony Award winner in studio with us.
There you go.
Talk about this play. I mean, for you, this is a world premiere, and you have had, you know, been working on a lot of new works, but you know, obviously you've had a lot of things going on in your career, you know, from being on the other side of the camera, being in scripts, writing screenplays. What's bringing you back to the theater? What's it about this play that gets you back into theater?
Well, about 3-4 years ago, Terrence Blanchard, who's a fantastic jazz trumpet player and composer, who does most of the film scores for Spike Lee and did the score for two of the movies that I directed, he was commissioned by Opera Theatre St. Louis to write an opera, his first opera. And he chose the subject, he chose Emile Griffith as the subject, and he asked me to write the libretto. At that time, I didn't really know anything about Emile. And so I did the research and got very excited and started to work on the libretto. But never having written a libretto before, I basically wrote a play and then adapted the play into the libretto. A libretto for an opera, even though the opera is 2.5 hours long, a libretto for an opera is maybe 30, 40 pages. It's all music and very few words. So there was a lot of material from the research that I couldn't get into the libretto.
Your experience with librettos? I mean, for you, I mean, you've been a playwright your entire career. I mean, you've done so much stuff. But, you know, when I was going through at the top, playwright, screenwriter, director, actor, I didn't put...
You didn't put librettist.
I didn't put librettist in there.
Yeah. Well, it was a fantastic experience. The opera world is its own world. It's very specific in many ways and very difficult and very rewarding, I mean, to hear someone singing your words at the top of their lungs as a soprano or a tenor. It was wonderful. And I'm a bit of an opera fan, so it was a great experience. But there was a lot of Emile's story that we just couldn't tell. And so then about a year ago, I have a kind of history with the guys at the Court Theater, Charlie Newell. I knew 100 years ago, and Stephen Albert, who's the executive director, I knew 150 years ago. So our paths had crossed many ways. But what happened was an actor who was in the play, Kamal Bolden, went to Steve and Charlie and said, I just read this book about Emile Griffith, and do you think there's a play in it, looking for something that he could work on himself? And so they heard that I had done the libretto, and they called me and said, would you be interested in doing the play? And I jumped at it because there was so much more to his story that I wanted to tell and I couldn't tell. And so that's what happened. So
What was it about? I mean, give us just an overview of what attracted you to Emile's story.
Well, the events of his life are very dramatic. He was a poor kid from St. Thomas who was abandoned by his mother and left to his own devices and was in a reform school and was sexually abused when he was really young. And he made his way to New York to find his mother, which he did. And they were then inseparable. But he then had ambitions to be a baseball player and a singer. He wanted to sing and play baseball, and he got a job in a hat factory because one of the other things, interesting things about him is that he designed women's hats. So he got a job in a hat factory, and the guy who ran the hat factory, Howie Albert, saw him one day without his shirt on and thought, this guy should be a boxer. And it was one of Howie Albert's great dreams to manage a boxer. And so that's how it started. And he immediately was a Golden Gloves winner, and his career just took off. So the events, and then of course there was the terrible tragedy in the middle of his career when he killed a man in the ring, put him into a coma, and 10 days later Benny Perret was the Cuban fighter, and he died. And then Emil had to live with that and continue fighting for quite a while.
When you're writing a play and you have such an amazing true story, where you're following a life, a bigger, you know, bigger than reality kind of life, how do you find the right moments as opposed to just doing chronological? Obviously, everything you just said, I mean, you jump from, you know, him being a boy in St. Thomas to sexually abused to working in a hat store to being a boxer. I mean, how as a playwright do you work with a biographical situation like that?
Well, I think you have to. I will cop to this. I don't know if other playwrights will, but basically, when you write a play, you're writing about yourself. And I don't care if it is a biography of another person. You attach yourself to the material in the way that you attach yourself to your own mm-hmm. life. And I'm of an age now where I am looking back and trying to make sense of all the things I have done and not done, and trying to come to a sort of peace about what I've done in my life and what I haven't done in my life.
Do you approach all your projects like that?
This was my approach here, because when I was working on the material, Emil was slipping into dementia, and I was interested in his attempt to make sense of his own life.
Right.
And that appealed to me. That was my connection. My connection was, what do you do when you're 70-something years old and you have that to deal with and that to look back on, and your mind is slipping away, so that there is a sort of dramatic tension about trying to get a grip on all this stuff before you lose your mental grip, you know?
Talking with Michael Christopher. He's the playwright of the new play Man in the Ring, which is in previews. It opens this Saturday on stage at the Court Theater in Hyde Park, directed by Charlie Newell. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll talk more about your career. I mean, because like I mentioned, Pulitzer Prize winner, Tony Award winner. You are also in the hit show Mr. Robot, which is on USA. You've got a lot going on right now. Michael Christopher is my guest here at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Big Table here on the 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Michael Christopher is my guest. He is the playwright of the new play Man in the Ring, which is in previews. It opens this Saturday on stage at the Court Theater in Hyde Park, directed by Charlie Newell, the longtime artistic director at the Court. Also, he is playing the CEO of E-Corps on the USA hit show Mr. Robot, which had a great night last night at the Emmys. Rami Malek gets the award.
Could have been
a little better. Right? You were nominated for best show.
Series,
yeah,
yes.
You had a lot going on,
but
you know what? Mr. Robot is a tremendous show about our times. About and Rami is tremendous in the show as the main character battling his demons, but also you know, living in this world. You know, for you, what attracted you to play this role, to play the CEO of E-Corp? Because it's a high-status sort of, you know, evil villain kind of CEO.
Yes. One critic said that Michael Christopher has become the avatar of corruption. So I've done this. I don't know why, but I'm such a nice guy. But I keep being cast. I did a show called Rubicon, in which I was a similar kind of evil guy. And then I was on Smash, the TV series, right, playing an evil producer, and so I seem to be. But really, the reason for this, and I wasn't really looking to do another television show, because the experience on Smash was not a great one. But the script, this guy, Sam Esmail, who writes all the scripts and directs all the scripts, and his mind is just amazing. And, you know, it's very unusual to get a television script where you don't have to say, oh, gee, the cops are coming, let's get out of here, you know, that kind of crap dialogue. this is really beautifully written mm-hmm. stuff, and it's about something. And he is the nicest man in the world. He is a great collaborator. So I was given the script, and I thought, well, this is great. The part didn't seem to be much in the first couple of episodes, and so, but I did the first one. Sam is great to work with. The actors are fantastic to work with. The set is a wonderful set. It shoots in New York, my home. So it was sort of, there was no way to say no.
Well, for you, I mean, playing the E-Corp CEO, I mean, I guess for you as an actor, and you've done so many different roles in your career, how do you play evil? What is it, I mean, when you go through setting yourself up to play the character, how do you sort of approach being an evil CEO that behind the scenes is cutthroat and, you know, is sort of the man with all the power in the show?
Well, I don't know. I mean, for me, Philip Price is he's a smart, nice guy. I mean, whatever he does, whatever happens on the show that he's responsible for, you know, that's, I don't make a judgment about it. I mean, from my point of view, he is a wonderful, smart opportunist, and any catastrophe or disaster that happens is always just another opportunity. And he did this season, Sam did write a speech where he talked about power and his need to be the most powerful person in the room. It's as simple as that. And whatever it takes to do that, to maintain that, to achieve that, he does. He's a fascinating guy. I mean, there's a certain loneliness about him, which I find interesting. There's no mention in the show ever about family or wife or children or...
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm waiting. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for next season to see...
Okay, you walk in, there's your family. You're like, yeah. Oh, I have a family. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's, I guess just watching you, I mean, there is this you really do sort of exhibit power. I mean, even in sort of the way that you're in small little scenes where maybe you don't have, you know, the other people around you are panicking or they're, you know, they're,
right.
You're,
yeah.
You know, you're sort of the statesman, the sort of high status statesman, powerful, evil villain, you know. It's so interesting to hear that, you know, you don't necessarily think of yourself that way as a character, because as an actor, you think of who Philip Price is, not right. necessarily what, you know, how he's perceived.
Yes. And really, he wants the economy to survive. He wants to do his best to have the economies. And if that means having his own currency, well, then so be it. That will help everyone. That's how you have to look at it.
For you, I mean, are you surprised at the success of this show? I mean, season two obviously takes off. Now you're at the, you know, you're seeing Emmy nominations and awards.
I know. I'm always surprised when something good is successful, because usually it's always something that's kind of mediocre or not so good that becomes a big success. But this show, I think it's high quality, and I'm really proud to be a part of it and to contribute to it. And I think you know, I think we got 3-4 more seasons to go, so it'll be fun to do.
Now, you said before that you weren't looking to get into television because, you know, bad experiences and other situations. You know, how often does that happen in a career of an actor, director, filmmaker, screenwriter, where you sour on a medium based on the way that people approach it, meaning that they don't make it such a good time. You know what I mean? Like, TV is different than the theater, and theater is different than film. You know, how often have you had the disappointments in your career about, you know?
Well, I guess if you look at the trajectory or the circle of it, I mean, I started as an actor, and then I guess I was frustrated enough as an actor to start writing. So then I was writing plays, and then I got frustrated enough writing plays that I started writing screenplays, and then I got frustrated enough writing screenplays to think, well, I better direct a few films. And then that was 2-3 great experiences, except the third one was a terrible experience with the studio, so that was frustrating. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll go back to the theater and do some work there. And then somebody asked me to act again, and I hadn't acted for 15 years, and I thought, well, So to me, I mean, anytime anybody puts up a wall, there's always a way around it. And that has taken me almost full circle. When I went back to acting only about 4 or 5 years ago, after having been away for so long, the great thing about it was that I felt like I was 19 years old. I just thought, wow, this is like being a kid again, you know.
Why'd you take the time off? What was it about taking 15
years?
Busy.
I was busy making movies and writing screenplays and things. And, there was no time. I used to do readings. Occasionally people would remember that I was an actor, and they'd say, would you do a reading of this play or this material? But it was impossible. But then after I kind of backed out of directing, after I did a picture called Original Sin with Antonio Banderas and Angelina Jolie. And after that, when I backed out, there was, and I sort of spent more time in New York. There was more time to get back into acting.
For you, do you see yourself staying with acting? I mean, is this something, obviously you're back into playwriting here, but I mean, obviously with the success of Mr. Robot and a solid role for you to play on the show, I mean, do you see yourself continuing to look for more roles to be in front of the camera?
Few, yeah. I'd like to do more theater. I did a workshop in New York just last month with a terrific director named Sam Gold and Oscar Isaacs, the actor who is planning to do Hamlet next season, and we did a kind of workshop where I did Claudius, and so that might happen. I'd like to do live theater. Is the most terrifying and most rewarding thing to do, so I'd like to do more of that.
Well, let's take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news, but I'm interested in exploring that a little bit more about the live theater and the emotions that go into it, and also the emotions that just go into being a creative person. You talked about frustration, some of the things that get in the way of a fulfilled creative life. Mm-hmm. Michael Christopher is my guest tonight. He's he's a playwright, screenwriter, director, actor. He's starring in the USA hit show Mr. Robot, which is just wrapping up its second season. He's also in town with his new play Man in the Ring, which is in previews now but opens this Saturday at the Court Theater in Hyde Park, directed by Charlie Newell. Michael Christopher, my guest. Stay with us. My guest tonight at the big table, playwright, screenwriter, director, actor, librettist, Michael Christopher. His new play, Man in the Ring, is in previews, and it opens this Saturday on stage at the Court Theater in Hyde Park, directed by Charlie Newell. He's also in the USA show Mr. Robot, which is wrapping up season 2. He plays the CEO of E-Corp. Let's talk, interesting, because right before the break, breaking through on the emotions that go with being a performer, being a writer, being a creative person. I mean, obviously, you've worked in so many different roles when it comes to producing work. Let's first talk about frustration, because you kind of set it up in a almost like a cycle of your career, that whenever you ran into frustrations, you were able to shift. Talk about the role frustration and disappointment play in an actor or director or playwright or all the way down the line's life.
Well, you know, I just recently ran across a quote from, I hope I get this right now, from Winston Churchill, who said, the quote is, success is the ability to go from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm. Mm. And I think that has to do with frustration, too. I mean, it has to do with you hit a wall, and there's a certain amount of rejection, or there's a certain amount of failure involved in what's happened, or you can't do what you feel you want to do, and then you reinvent. I mean, that's what I've always done.
Let's go back 40 years. I mean, 40 years ago, you were a Pulitzer Prize winner, Tony Award winner for. I mean, it's amazing to think about having so much success in your career early. In the way that, you know, you could do anything you wanted to do. But that's not necessarily always the case.
No, it isn't always the case. But the thing is that in 1977, 78, whenever that was, 79, what was happening was so many good actors were moving from theater into film. So many directors who I knew were moving from theater into film. So, you know, the first screenplay of mine that was done was Meryl Streep and Bobby De Niro, Robert De Niro. And I had been on stage with Meryl. We had been working at Lincoln Center in the production of The Cherry Orchard. so and the director was a theater director. So, and that was a time when the screenwriter in film at that time was always protected by the director. You never spoke to a studio executive. You never were. You only worked with the director. And that went on for several years for me. But then slowly the business changed. So when the business changes, your career changes. You no longer are hired by the director. You're hired by the studio. So then you are answering to a studio executive. And the director is answering to a studio executive. So the thing changes. And studio executives are not as creative as some of the wonderful directors that I worked for.
Yeah, because you're talking about the work when you and the director are
exactly
what the conversation's about.
You know, if you've worked with Brian De Palma or Ulu Grossbart or, you know, George Miller, or you've worked with these guys, that's who you want to talk to. You don't want to talk to, you know, the head of Disney or it's not the same person. it's not the same conversation. So that happened, and then I realized, well, that's how frustrating it is being a screenwriter. And so then HBO came to me, and they were just beginning their film. Well, not film, but making films for cable.
Right.
And they asked me to do Gia, and so I thought, well, so I'll move over to directing, where I have a little more control of what's going on. So I was writing and directing for 2-3 pictures.
You've got such a flow, and you've been able to bounce, and just, you know, talking about the Winston Churchill quote, the failure to failure kind of
Did
that ring true for you? I mean, were you able to bouncing from a disappointment or to watching watching things change?
Yeah.
Did you keep your enthusiasm?
Absolutely. I mean, because if I hadn't, I would have stopped, you know. People stop all the time. People leave this business all the time. I've been really, really, really lucky. I mean, some of it I attribute to my own sort of stubbornness. I still love it. I do. And it was great going back to acting and rediscovering acting. It's great not having done a play for a while, not having written a play or having a play produced for a while, to go back into the theater and get that rush of an audience watching
that
play.
Talk about that rush. Talk about the emotion that comes with watching this.
This one is extraordinary because we have 4 or 5 audiences so far, and the laughter in the theater is extraordinary, and the by the end of the play, the people are sobbing from the emotions that are unleashed by the actors on that stage. And at the same time, for me, it's really important because I started in classical theater. When I was studying, I did, you know, not only Shakespeare, but especially the Greeks, which I always loved, Sophocles and Aeschylus and Euripides. And because they would tell these stories that were extraordinarily tragic stories,
right.
But those plays were done with sound and music and light and rhythm, you know?
Yeah.
And when I was putting this play together, I discovered all these Caribbean proverbs and children's games that all came with little songs. And so I've structured the play around those songs so that the actors act as a kind of chorus. So it really is a throwback to that kind of Greek drama, where you have these sort of horrifying things happen emotionally, but there's this sense of music and rhythm underneath that's going that makes the whole thing sort of a joyous experience.
For you, I mean, obviously having such a varied career in show business, from being a screenwriter to a playwright, I mean, they obviously are both different sort of, you know, vessels for you, but how are they similar and how are they different? Because you just mentioned with the player, you can watch, you can use a lot of the same techniques that were used in Greek plays and Shakespeare, and use things to move stuff around and play. And screenwriting, it's got to be a little bit different in the sense that you're really working off how movies have been made, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's a different language. I mean, in many cases, screenwriting and playwriting have become very similar. You see a kind of writing for film that's the same as the writing for theater. And in fact, a lot of writing for theater now, which is beautiful writing, but for me, it's just too realistic. It's too... So I see a real difference in creating a visual story with dialogue, which is a film, or creating a story totally out of language, which is a play.
Do you prefer one or the other? I mean, it's hard to say. Obviously, you do two different things, but
I think
you started in playwriting.
I think I prefer playwriting. I would prefer screenwriting if I were also the director, because then you are because
it's
finally
vision,
in
right.
film, the director is the storyteller, and as a screenwriter, you're basically working for the director. You do the research for the director. Anybody who thinks, you know, a screenwriter really is the star of the movie is full of whatever. It's just not true. It's the director who finally creates the rhythm of a scene, creates the performances, creates the thing. It is the best job in show business to be
a director
of a film. Yeah. Yeah, Sidney Lumet said, if you ever get a chance to direct a film, just do it, because it is an amazing wonder. It uses everything you know, every second of every day, all the way through from the first minute you say you're going to do this thing to the last time you lock that picture and put it away. It is all-encompassing, wonderful, wonderful experience.
Michael Christopher is my guest in studio. You know, I'm interested, is there any one of these disciplines that you could live without? I mean, obviously we've talked about being a playwright. A Man in the Ring is on stage now. Screenwriter, you've done that and directed at the same time. Acting, obviously what you're doing right now with Mr. Robot. Is there one discipline that you're like, you know what, that one's great, that pays the bills, but I'm going to focus on this instead?
Well, I have said that... I mean, I really don't need to do a lot of television now, especially since this robot thing has happened. And, you know, I know that for 3 or 4 months I'm going to be doing some real quality work with quality people. I can now say no to doing a lot of other things in television. And although I think everyone says we're in a golden age of television, it's fading. I think there's just too much of it now, and it's not all that good. It's not as good as we think.
They say golden age because there's just a lot.
There's a lot.
Of Netflix
and some
Amazon.
Of it was really good for a while. I think with the beginnings of cable and now, but now there's so many shows, and I don't know how good they are. But so probably acting in film or television, I could let go of.
You're just all about the play.
I'm all about the theater.
What is it about the theater? At the end of the day, that experience of not just being a playwright, being an actor on the stage, what is it about that experience, that discipline, that creatively fulfills you?
Well, it's indescribable, and probably I don't understand it, which is another reason why I'm still attracted to it. But it is terrifying. You have to live there. You have to live in front of people. You have to accomplish. But something I tell you, and to get myself on the stage, I mean, you know, I'm throwing up in the bathroom and everything. Still,
really?
Yeah. And to get myself to get out there, and then as soon as I get out there and get the first, like, 10 words out of my mouth.
Then you're okay.
And then it's like, you know, then you're just hungry like a beast. You're just going after
the
that.
Same thing with this show every night.
That's it.
That's how it starts.
Yeah.
The Pulitzer Prize-winning, Tony Award-winning Michael Christopher, his new play, Man in the Ring, is in previews right now. It opens this Saturday on stage at the Court Theater in Hyde Park. It's directed by Charlie Newell. He's also on the hit show Mr. Robot, which just wraps up. I believe the last episode is airing this week.
Wednesday.
Yeah. He plays, of course, Philip Price, the CEO of E-Corps. Mr. Christopher, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in and being my guest tonight at the Big
Thank
Table.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.